Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to a new episode of Land Grant Holy Land in Conversation. My name is Matt Tamanini. On this podcast, we talk to people in and around Ohio State athletics and the sporting world at large to bring you a different insight and perspective to the teams, athletes, and university that you love. On today's episode, we are in conversation with not one, but two different people that will hopefully give us an insight into what the Buckeyes could be seeing in the NCAA tournament. First, we will be hearing from Andy Hutchins from SB Nation's Florida site, Alligator Army, and then from Brian Manning from SB Nation's Virginia Tech site, Gobbler Country. Now, that is not to say that I am overlooking Ohio State's first round opponent, Oral Roberts, but SB Nation has not yet established a site for that school's athletic teams, so I will be giving you a quick and dirty scouting report on the Golden Eagles myself. Now, the fourth-seeded Eagles beat North Dakota, South Dakota State, and then North Dakota State in the Summit League Conference Tournament to win the league's automatic bid. They come into the Big Dance as a 15th seed with a 16-10 overall record. Early in the season, they did have some out-of-conference games against Power 5 squads, although they lost all of them, falling to Missouri by 27, Oklahoma State by 5, Oklahoma by 14, and Arkansas by 9. Now, the Fighting Dentists are led by Summit League Player of the Year Max Asmus, a 6'1 sophomore from Rockwell, Texas, who averages 24.4 points per game, which led his league. He was also tops in the Summit League in free throw and three-point percentage. Asmus averages 3.6 triples per game on 8.3 attempts and is known to have absolutely no conscience and will put up a shot from just about anywhere. Oral Roberts Jr. Kevin Abinor also made the Summit League first team. The 6'8 forward averages 18.2 points and 9.5 rebounds per game on the season, and was the only player in the conference to average a double-double in league play. Abinor and Asmus were the highest scoring duo in the Summit League this year at over 40 points per game. While Abinor is the tallest regular contributor on the team, he is not confined strictly to the lane. He does shoot over 50% from the field this season, but that's not just because he gets a ton of layups. He is also at 46.9% from distance, averaging just under 4 3-point attempts per game, and he's 88.1% from the charity stripe, so he is not a candidate for a hack a big down the stretch in games. As a team, Paul Mills' squad averages 81.8 points per game, which is 12th nationally, but gives up 75.8, which comes in at 293rd. Ken Pom has the Golden Eagles as the 153rd rated team in the country, primarily because of their 285th ranking in terms of adjusted defensive efficiency. Now, my old friend, which I use a lot during the college football season, NCAA Game Simulator, projects Ohio State to win this game 81.1% of the time with an average score of 82-69. Nice. Only 1.6% of these games will go to overtime according to the simulations, but roughly 20% will be decided by less than 5 points, which honestly is a bit concerning. Conversely, though, in 33% of the simulated games, Ohio State wins by more than 20. Ohio State is currently a 16-point favorite in this game, with the over-under being anywhere from 157 to 164.5, so bet wisely, my friends. Now, while I certainly don't want to dismiss the chances of the dreaded 15-2 upset, two seeds do have a 132-8 record all-time in the tournament for what it's worth, Again, since SB Nation hates Oral Roberts and hasn't created a site for their athletic department, I am now going to move on to chat with folks who know Ohio State's potential second round opponents very well. So without further ado, let's start with my conversation about Florida basketball with Andy Hutchins from Alligator Army. So Andy, I can imagine that I speak for many Ohio State basketball fans and say that they probably didn't watch a ton of Florida Gators basketball this year. So in a nutshell, how would you characterize what this team is like and what they've been through in the 2020-2021 season?
Well, I'd say what they've been through is obviously that's the really big crux of the issue with Florida this year, because obviously Keontae Johnson going down in late December with collapsing on the floor at Florida State with what was then and is still now sort of a murky medical issue that the only thing we've really learned since then is that it's not related to COVID. That was obviously the defining moment of this Florida season. And I would say that this team was one team before Keontae went down and certainly has been another one since. He was the preseason SEC player of the year. He was obviously going to be a very important part of this team, and not having him around hurts Florida a lot. I don't think Florida's ever quite reached the heights it could have hit with him, but him not being around has allowed, I think, Trey Mann, who's pretty clearly this team's best player, to flourish in a lot of ways. So I think you've been seeing, especially in the last few weeks, Mann be a lot more ball dominant. He's been certainly, I think, more assertive on the offensive end. And he looks like the kind of guy who, if he gets hot, could carry Florida through a round or two of this NCAA tournament, especially because I don't think that there's another player on this team that has that sort of step up and win a game or two potential. Beyond that, I think Florida was, if Keontae was around, going to be a team that mixed youth and experience pretty well.
Yeah.
But without him, is a team that I think is a lot younger than people realize. A lot of the pieces that are on this team are new or in new roles. Noah Locke, I think, is probably the only guy who's really playing basically the same role as he was a year ago. So you've got players who are learning things on the fly. You had a season that's obviously been disrupted, not just by Keontae, but by COVID a few times. Florida didn't start its season until later. And then it's been disrupted, I think, twice since. Things are just sort of up in the air. And for Florida to be a 7 seed surprised a lot of Florida fans, because this was not necessarily a team that a lot of us have loved. It's been maddeningly inconsistent at times. It doesn't always score the way people want it to. But he's done the things in big games, beat West Virginia at West Virginia, and really took it to Tennessee early on this year, that it deserves its 7 seed, but it's also probably going to have a really hard time, not just getting out of the first round, but then giving Ohio State a challenge when it gets there and meets the Buckeyes.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Trey Mann, first team all SEC. What is it about him that has made him so dominant this year? He is one of four players on the Gators team that's averaging in double figures, but it's not like he's blowing everybody away. He's got 16, but obviously something has made him stand out amongst a lot of the other players in that conference. What separates him from other guards in the league?
I think it's control and comfort. And I think it's those two things that have sort of fed his ability to be an efficient scorer. He was last year a guy who was pretty well highly touted, certainly was thought of as a guy who could be a scorer. The comparison that he got a lot in high school when he was a five-star player was Steph Curry, which is not really entirely fair, but kind of goes with the way that his handle and his shot work. But you didn't see it as a freshman. And now as he's grown and matured and become a sophomore, he's literally grown. He added about 2 inches. He's now about 6'5". He's also gotten a lot calmer on the court. He knows he's not going to get yanked out if he makes one or two mistakes, because he's the only guy that they've got at point guard in a lot of ways. And he also knows that, if he's taking these shots in rhythm, if he takes some threes, he's shooting 40% from three, so he can afford to jack up a three here or there. And he's also shown he's a pretty good finisher, so he can afford to take the drives to the rim that may or may not turn into, either a bucket or an and-one opportunity, or, if you're a point guard and you get the shot block, you get the shot block. So I think it's a lot of comfort, it's control, it's confidence. He's, a lot better as a distributor, too. And I think all those things he's a more mature player, and you don't necessarily see this all the time, especially with highly talented guys who come in as freshmen, really don't swim. They sink more than they swim in their freshman year, but he has come back and he's swimming now. He's really swimming fast.
And what's interesting about this team is I look through the construction and admit, even though I actually live in Florida, I have not watched a ton of Gators basketball. But as I kind of scroll through the roster here, it doesn't look completely dissimilar from the roster configuration of Ohio State, except for at one position. And that is, he's listed as a forward, but anyone who's 6'11 at this point has to be considered at least a semi-center. And that's Colin Castleton, who was a second-team All-SEC player. But Ohio State has really struggled with big men this year at times. They've beaten teams. They've beaten Iowa with Luka Garza. They've beaten Illinois with Kofi Coburn. But they've also been really dominated by big men throughout the year. Colin is 6'11", but he's only 231, so not exactly a bruiser down low. So what is his game like? He's one of the leaders in blocks in the SEC, but is he like a dominant force down low, or is he more of like an NBA prototype 6'11 guy who can do a little bit on the defensive end, but steps out and kind of roams around on the outside and puts up shots as much as he is down in the paint?
Yeah, it's unfortunate they have to go to cliche in a lot of ways for Colin Castleton, but gritty and tenacious are two of the words that come to it. And, you know, he's a white guy, he's a big white guy, but he's not a big white stiff.
Yeah.
And he's also not a Nikola Jokic type player. He's not going to step out. He's definitely not a guy who should be shooting threes. I think he shot like seven of them on the year, and none of them have been particularly close. But he's a guy who has a relatively developed post game. He definitely likes turning over his shoulder and taking these jump hooks from 6-7 feet out. He likes backing it down in the post, and Florida tries to run offense through him, which is something that it hasn't always been able to do with some of its bigs in recent years. And he's a really good and tenacious defender. And I think one of the other things that people don't necessarily always see or always credit him for is that he is one of the most willing screen setters that I've ever seen. There's no screen he's not willing to set. There's no way he's not willing to seal off somebody inside. He does a lot of the really little things that you think, oh man, that's a guy that I'm really going to want playing on my team, even if his skill set's a little limited. I think if he develops as a jump shooter, maybe you turn him into a better player over the course of years. But what he's been able to do for Florida is provide a lot of stability inside. And I think if, you know, if Ohio State is a team that's got enough inconsistency that sometimes you can take advantage of them inside, you know, that opens up the opportunity for Castleton to have a game that's like a 15-9 or 14-8. And maybe do some dominance, you know, when it's getting offensive boards and putting them back, or getting to the line and making a few foul shots.
Yeah, and you mentioned Mann and Castleton. Those are the two leading scorers on the team this year. But as I said earlier, there are two other guys who average in double figures in Tyree Appleby and Noah Locke, whom you mentioned. If, say, Trey Mann is, because you said he's a guy that could put the team on his back and kind of lead them to some really interesting stuff. If it's not him scoring points, who's somebody that could potentially take over for the Gators and really have a big game in the postseason?
I think the only other, the takeover guy is Appleby. I think he's the guy who can create offense for himself and for others to some degree. He's got, you know, incredible speed. He's a really annoying defender, but he can definitely, you know, in that annoying sense, take the ball away and make sure that he is the guy who gets on the run, makes the two. I don't think Locke is that guy because he relies so much on other players to set up his offense. He's much better as a set shooter than as a creator. And I just don't think if you look down the rest of the roster, there's anybody who's going to be able to reliably be counted on to take over games. Scotty Lewis is a guy who, if he gets hot and if he fixes his shot, which has been all sorts of bad over the last couple of weeks, you know, he could give you 12, 15 points a game. There have been flashes for other players on this team. Anthony DeRuggie is a guy who's, if he's really physical inside, if he grabs a lot of rebounds, he could give you 10 points. But I just don't think that this Florida team has guys who are individually great players and great scorers beyond that man. And obviously Keontae Johnson would have been that guy. It's just a lot harder when you get past Mann and Appleby to look at guys and say, yeah, this person can individually create offense. A lot of the other stuff is dependent on, you know, ball movement, team play, et cetera.
On the defensive end, Ohio State's had the ability to kind of score points in different ways this season. They like Florida to a similar degree, don't necessarily have a guy who often takes over, although Dwayne Washington Jr. has kind of been doing that later in the season. But they've had a lot of games where different guys step up at different times. From the defensive side of the ball from Florida, what do they try to do to get opposing teams out of rhythm and force them into bad shots or whatever it is that is the Gators' defensive mindset?
Well, I think the thing about this year is that this was going to be the year that Mike White really went to pressing, and he was going to be full court pressing from tip to tip or from 0 to 0.
Yeah.
that obviously went out the window with Keonta going down. I don't think you've got the same sort of personnel that you can press with. However, Florida still presses, and Florida still switches up defenses. There's a 1-3-1 that White often turns to, especially when it's in sort of dicey territory in the second half. You might see a 1-3-1 for 5, 6, 7 possessions that swings a 10-2 run Florida's way or something. And there's a lot of individual ball pressure, too. Florida's, you know, there's been comments. Florida analytics folks have been worried about the idea that Florida doubles a little bit too much at the post right now and maybe doesn't rotate quite as well out of those doubles as it could. And there have been a lot of open threes on the backside corner this year that has been a frustration for a lot of fans. But the thing about Florida is that you don't generally get one look for the entire 40 minutes. You're going to have to crack one or two different things. You might have to crack a man. You might have to crack a 2-3. You might have to solve a 1-3-1. And there's really – there's enough versatility with some of the personnel that you could get some of those different looks on a possession-to-possession basis, which is something that White's, I think, prided himself on over the course of his career in Florida. So that's sort of the defensive identity. It's a shifting identity.
Yeah, and that makes it so much more difficult to prepare for, especially for a team like Ohio State, who could potentially face them in the second round of the NCAA tournament. When you have such a short turnaround, trying to figure out all of the different looks you're going to get, that can really throw a wrench into preparation plans on a short turnaround in a postseason tournament. I'm interested because Ohio State finished the regular season losing 4 straight, then went on a really crazy run in the Big Ten tournament, won 3, and then went to overtime in the championship game. Florida was not exactly in the same boat, but they lost their last 2 in the regular season, lost 4 of 7, then went into the tournament, won a game, and then lost to Tennessee in the quarterfinals. What's the vibe for the team heading into the postseason? Do they feel like they've got some things figured out and they're gaining momentum, or do they feel like they've regressed since some of their earlier successes? Where are they at coming into the NCAA tournament?
You know, I wouldn't say obviously that this team is playing as well as it has all season. I think that peak came in January, and then there was a bad game against South Carolina and a COVID pause. And I think a lot of the, you know, momentum, form, whatever you want to put it as, that kind of vanished then. But I do think that there have been a lot of good things after that COVID pause. And these games that Florida's lost, they've lost Arkansas to Missouri, to Tennessee twice. Arkansas's obviously a 3 seed. Missouri's in the tournament and only won a game on the buzzer. And that game was really one that Florida fought and fought and fought to get back into. And these 2 Tennessee games have been ones in which Florida has been really just running up against a Tennessee team that's a pretty good matchup for them, that was full strength and really motivated. And I think that, you know, those losses, even if they are, you know, double-digit losses in the case of the 2 Tennessee games, they've not been really bad losses or games that Florida was really out of. They've just been teams that are better than Florida, playing better than Florida. And I think Ohio State's a team that could certainly play a game like that. And obviously, at its peak, Ohio State has beaten some better teams than Florida's faced. But I also just don't think that Florida, you know, the nature of an inconsistent team is that it could be inconsistent and you wouldn't really know whether the bad performance is.
Yeah.
It's a bad performance based on the fact that you've had other bad performances, or this is just, you know, sometimes you roll the 80%, sometimes you roll the 120%. And I think that, you know, that's kind of maddening for a lot of Florida fans, but it's really just sort of the way that the team is. You know, you lost a lot of the consistency and reliability when Keontae went down. You just sort of get what you get in a lot of ways now.
Yeah. All right. So I want to kind of look a little bit in towards the bracket here. I'm not going to ask you necessarily if Ohio State and Florida play, what your prediction is, because there's still stuff to be determined and we want to see what teams look like before that happens. But I will ask you first for what your thoughts are about going up against Virginia Tech in the opening round game.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting matchup. I called it a brutal draw, which I think a lot of Florida fans who maybe aren't super familiar with Virginia Tech were a little surprised by, but I think that's a really good Virginia Tech team, despite the fact that it's a 10 seed. I think, you know, the fact that they played something like 5 games in the last 30 days or something like that certainly worked against them in terms of the selection committee.
Sure.
It's a good, it's a disciplined team. I like Mike Young a lot. He runs a lot of really good offense. I think I'm going to say his name wrong, but Akumo or Alumo, whoever it is that Virginia Tech has inside, he's a really tough matchup, especially for Florida. He can do a lot of things, maybe go 20-10 and be a force inside. And I think that that sort of team, too, a team that can do a lot of different things offensively, matches what Florida tries to do defensively pretty well. So I wouldn't be surprised if Virginia Tech wins this game. I think it's going to be probably a pretty close game, and I would tend to think that Florida's going to be able to pull it off with Trayman if he can play well. But, you know, it's a coin flip in a lot of ways. I just wouldn't be surprised either way.
Yeah. And a lot of 7-10 matchups are like that, you know, because they are teams who are kind of in the middle there, who've had decent seasons, but not great seasons. And they're usually, you know, Power 5 conference teams. So they are tested against good opposition throughout the year as well. All right. Last question here. Have you had a chance to fill out your bracket yet?
I have not. I have not filled out my bracket in full. I can tell you that, you know, Gonzaga, I think, is the best team, head and shoulders above everybody else. So I would fill it out backwards from Gonzaga winning. But I don't know beyond that. I think it's a very interesting year in that I think a lot of the 1-2s and 3s are good enough that they can knock each other off. And I don't think that you're going to see a ton of upsets up to that 3 line. I think that 1-2-3, you're going to see a lot of those teams in the Elite Eight. But then I think you can also see some really good games in the Elite Eight between these teams.
Yeah, I think this year is so weird that anything is possible, but it just looks like there's a maybe because of the weird off seasons, the most talented and experienced teams really have risen to the top. And that might be because of the lack of off season and summer work that really helps younger teams. So I agree. I think a lot of the higher seeded teams will probably do well, but it'll be a ton of fun when they end up matching up against each other in the later rounds.
Yeah. And obviously you hope that nothing comes out, that some team has to leave. You know, this is as close to a legitimate tournament as you're going to get out of this year. And if a team has to get knocked out of the Sweet 16 or somewhere even further along because of COVID, that'd be a real shame.
That sucks.
So I hope that doesn't happen, but you know, we got to cross our fingers for that.
Next up, let's turn our attention to number 10 seed Virginia Tech with Gobbler Country's Brian Manning. All right, Brian, I think the first question here, we have to talk about the fact that in this year of weirdness with COVID, in which the season hasn't looked like anything else, Virginia Tech's season has been one of, if not the most hard hit by this. They were on a roll going into the latter half of the regular season. They won 10 of 13 and then had to shut it all down on February 6th and really didn't play a game for 2.5 weeks. What has this season been like for the Hokies with all of the ups doing really well and then having to put everything on hold for a considerable amount of time late in the regular season?
Well, early in the season, things were going great. They upset Villanova back in November. And things were going great. And then they weren't really hit hard by COVID. Most of the games they lost, like maybe in January, were due to issues with other schools. Like they missed a game at Virginia, but it was due to an issue at Virginia. They missed another game. It was due to an issue, I think it was at Florida State. And then, boom, it hit the Hokies, and they pretty much didn't play all of February. When they returned to action against Georgia Tech, they were just completely – I mean, you could tell they didn't practice because of the pause and the – athletic program. They didn't get to practice and they were pretty much blown out against a team they could beat. And then they come back to action later that week and they beat Wake Forest by like 40 points. It was the best performance since they've been in the ACC. And then there was another long pause. So it's just been they've been hit really hard, but it didn't hit till February. It's like they were good up until then and they were playing really good basketball. They were at the top of the ACC. I mean, they beat the top team, Virginia, pretty handily actually. This is a team – losing Jalen Cohn has hurt this team. Jalen Cohn's a sophomore guard out of Greensboro. Losing Jalen Cohn's hurt this team lately, and I worry about that going into the tournament this week. He's the top three-point shooter on the team. He has an ankle injury. He won't play in the first round, so that's kind of something to watch.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that Virginia Tech beat Virginia. That was on January 30th, and they won by 14, but they've only played 5 games since then, which is crazy to think about a college basketball team only playing 5 games in a month and a half at this point. When they are at full strength, when they've had time to practice, when they have their rhythm and their flow, what is the best thing about this Hokie basketball team?
The best thing about this team is, compared to last season, this team has an inside presence. I mean, Justin Mutz isn't the biggest guy. He's a 6'7 junior. And then you have Kiva Aluma. He's the guy to watch. I think Kiva Aluma would have been a first-team All-ACC player had it not been for the COVID issues in February. I think he was a contender for the player of the year. He's an inside-out presence. He can run the floor, play D, shoot threes. He does everything. If he's going strong and Because I know in the game against the last game they played against North Carolina, he didn't have a good game. He was up and down the floor, but he didn't have a good game, and it hurt him in the end because they couldn't keep up with North Carolina. North Carolina had all the big guys inside, and Laluma's Virginia Tech's big guy. He struggled, and as a result, the team struggled. And when the three-pointers aren't falling, it hurts the team. But if the three-pointers are falling, this team can beat anybody. And when I say anybody, I don't know that they're going to compete with Gonzaga right now, but when they're hot, they're really good. So and I think that's something to watch out for. Hunter Couture is a guy coming off the bench. He's a really good shooter as well. So, but to simply answer your question, if Aluma goes well, this team's going to be a contender for a Sweet 16 spot at least.
Yeah, I mean, Kiveh Aluma, he did end up being like the highest vote getting member of the second team on the all ACC list. So he was right there fighting for it. And I think you're probably absolutely right with the amount of time that he lost, kind of got penalized for that. But when you look at him, like, he's not dissimilar from a guy on Ohio State's team, like EJ Liddell. He's 6'9", 235, is a guy who gets about 15.5 points per game, but as well gets 8 rebounds, shoots 35% from the three-point line, can do a little bit inside and outside. Ohio State struggled a lot with traditional centers, which Aluma is obviously not. But how would you define their inside presence? You talked a little bit about Justin Mutz, who's a little undersized, but he is more of a post player down low. What do they look like inside, and what do teams have to do to kind of on either end of the floor to mitigate whatever they're going to do in the paint?
They're actually, for a smaller team, when I say smaller, Aluma and Mutz are 6'8 and 6'7 respectively. As a smaller team, they actually rebound really well. Tyrese Radford's a 6'1 sophomore. He is the best rebounding guard you're ever going to see, and that's no joke. He averaged like 7 rebounds a game last season. They're a really good rebounding team, but they still struggle with guys who do have an inside presence. As you watched against North Carolina, North Carolina has the guys that I think there's a seven foot guy, Walker Kessler, then they have Sharp and those guys, Brooks. They're really huge inside, and the Hokies struggle with those guys because the sheer size, you just weren't going to get rebounded. They were out rebounded by double digits against the Tar Heels, and that's going to be an issue moving forward. But if they play a team without a true inside presence, like Ohio State, I think it could be a really good back and forth game. But again, the shots have to fall. If the shots aren't falling, they're going to struggle. And when Tech's playing, they have their point guard, Wabisa Beattie. He is a great point guard, great ball handler, great on-ball defender. Does everything well, but he can't shoot and he can't score. So in any other time, yeah, it's like you're playing with four guys on offense at times. So if one or two guys are struggling and your point guard can't score, the Hokies are in a spot.
Yeah, that's usually not good when you're playing 4-on-5 on one end of the floor effectively. So looking at the end of their season, at least so far, they've had those games against North Carolina, Wake Forest, and Georgia Tech kind of since they returned. They've only had 3 games. And like you said, they've been kind of up and down in those games. And they had a big gap in between the end of the regular season and the beginning of the ACC tournament. Now they've got another, you know, week plus gap there. What's the feeling about this team being ready mostly physically and in rhythm to start the NCAA tournament on Friday?
One thing I'm happy with is the second COVID pause they had, they still got to practice. When that happened the first time, they weren't practicing, it showed. So when they played North Carolina, they weren't completely out of sync. They dominated. I wouldn't go say they dominated. They controlled the first 30 minutes of that game. They led for the most part for 30 minutes, and then Carolina wore them down with the size in the last 10 minutes. And that was the issue, but the Hokies were preparing it, and it was because they had practice time, and they'll have practice time coming into this week. So I think they're going to be sharp against Florida. That's my prediction. Yeah. I'm not sure they're going to win per se, but I know they'll be sharp, and I think they'll be ready to go.
Yeah. What's interesting about this matchup, and this stuff happens in the NCAA tournament all the time, so I'm not saying this is unusual, but despite all the pauses, despite all of the the weirdness with the schedule, Virginia Tech's been ranked for most of the season, yet they're going to come into the NCAA tournament as a 10 seed, while Florida, who I think was only ranked 1 week the entire season, comes in as the 7. So despite the fact they're a lower seed, if you go by the AP poll, They're the favorite. So what do you expect? You said you think it'll be a good game. You're not sure who's going to win, but what do you expect this game against the Gators to look like on Friday?
I think the Hokies are going to, I think the Gators will try to slow them down a little bit because it seems to be their trend. And I think the Hokies will try to speed it up. I think the Hokies are going to shoot a lot of three-pointers, and that's just the MO of Mike Young team. They get back on defense, and I believe the Hokies are just going to shoot like that. But if, like I said, if the shots aren't falling, it's going to be an issue. The Gators, I haven't watched the Gators too much this year, but I know that there's been some disappointment in the SEC circles mm-hmm. with the Gators. And the whole seeding issue, I think it's a whole COVID thing, and we go back to that. We keep going back to that. But there's no way a team that's – the Hokies beat Villanova early in the year when Villanova was ranked third. They beat Clemson when they were ranked. They beat Virginia when they were ranked. They beat Virginia still ranked. They beat Duke when they were ranked. They were, like, undefeated against ranked teams in the season, and they're a 10 seed. When they finished third in the ACC, it doesn't make sense. But the only explanation is they haven't played, and I think that's what the committee saw when they made the – schedule, which was really weird. You're still ranked and you're a 10 seed, so, and that's the only explanation I have of it. But I think they're going to be the best 10, whether they win or lose, they're still the best 10 seed in this tournament, for whatever that means.
yeah. Well, I think a lot of it too is that they're in a season when, despite, you know, there being a couple, you know, pretty highly ranked teams from the ACC, this is not a normal season in the ACC with some of the, you know, the blue bloods, no pun intended, North Carolina and Duke not doing so hot. Duke not making the tournament. UNC, I think, is an 8 seed. What's this season been like just for ACC basketball in general, without kind of some of the stalwarts of the conference having seasons that they're used to having?
I know you're a Big Ten guy, and I'm an ACC guy, so I'm always going to say the ACC is the best conference. This year it was not the best conference, and
yeah.
I don't even know that it was the second best conference this year. It was really bad, and of course a lot of that has to do with Duke and North Carolina. Mm-hmm. North Carolina is still really talented. North Carolina struggles with guard play. They have the bigs to beat anybody, but they don't have that guard like they're used to having, like the Ty Lawson and those guys. So that's an issue with Carolina to watch. And as far as Duke, Duke got rid of, when Johnson left the team, Duke was a completely different team, but they still weren't good. And it's strange because they still have plenty of talent. And then you have Virginia, which is a top seed. This wasn't a typical Virginia team either.
Yeah.
And it didn't make sense because the Hoos have a lot of talent, and there was just something missing. And I think what was missing with the UVA team was defense. I don't think their defense was quite as strong. I actually think they were a better offensive team this year, mm-hmm. but the defense took a few steps back, and a few steps back for Virginia defense is still better than most teams' defense. So, and then there's Florida State. I think Florida State's the best team in the league. They didn't get the number one seed, but I still think they're the best team in the league. But and this isn't even the best Florida State team we've seen in the last 5 years.
Yeah, I haven't finished my bracket, but I've got Florida State at least making it to the Sweet 16. Like, I think they're a really fun team. I live in Florida, so I have seen them a little bit. And they're an interesting team, and I would not have a problem if they beat, as you said, I'm a Big Ten guy, I would not have a problem if they beat Michigan to go to the Elite Eight. I would love that quite a bit, honestly. But speaking of brackets, I'm not going to, you know, who knows what happens on Friday. Perhaps Ohio State and Virginia Tech matchup. I'm not going to ask you about that game because there's far too many variables to consider before that. But if you filled out your bracket, I am just kind of interested to hear what you have to say about the tournament as a whole. Do you have a Final Four? Do you have any thoughts on what's going to happen over the next few weeks out in Indianapolis?
This is one of those years where everybody says you should never pick all the number one seeds. And and it's one of those years where you haven't seen a lot of teams play. And then what teams you have seen play, you don't really know what you're seeing because it's such a weird year with teams, with players opting out, players missing, and I still don't think we're going to see four number one seeds in the Final Four. I don't believe it. I think Gonzaga gets there pretty easily. Mm-hmm. I think Baylor's got a good shot to get in there too. And I know they're in our bracket there with Ohio State and then the Hokies. And then you look at the other brackets. I think Illinois is really good. And I don't think if Michigan gets to the Elite Eight, which I think. Michigan could have an issue with LSU in the second round. LSU's athleticism. LSU's got four really good players. And then you look at Florida State in the Sweet 16 matchup. FSU can absolutely beat Michigan. But then there's Alabama in the Elite Eight. Alabama's really good. And I don't know that Michigan gets past Alabama, but I would go with Alabama getting to the Final Four on that bracket. Illinois maybe getting there from the Midwest. And then I see Baylor and Gonzaga. So I would say three number one seeds is I could go with.
Yeah, and Michigan's down one of their best players. Livers is out for an intern amount of time with some sort of foot injury. It's expected to be a broken bone in his foot. So he's more than likely not going to play. So you've got your second leading scorer out for the NCAA tournament. That puts Michigan behind an eight ball, even if they were already not necessarily a team in terms of the number ones that was expected to go super far. But all right, so let's wrap it up with this, Brian. If Virginia Tech is to make a run against Florida, then Ohio State, and then against whomever comes out of the other little four-team quadrant on this side of the South region, what are they going to have to do to string together a couple wins and put on a run into, say, the Sweet 16 or Elite 8 this season?
The biggest thing for the Hokies is they need to shoot about 45% from three-point range. If they can do that, they're going to be fine. One thing that helps is Jalen Conan, who I mentioned earlier. He will not play Friday, but he could be back if they play Ohio State in the second round. So that's something to watch out there. Shooting is the biggest key for the Hokies, and you hear that for a lot of teams, but they're really relying on the outside shot. If they can knock down close to 45% of their shots, I think they got a chance to beat a few teams and create some noise. And I know you get past that potential Virginia Tech and Ohio State matchup, and then you look at the other part of the bracket there, you see maybe Arkansas, Texas Tech, and I think either Ohio State or Virginia Tech can beat either of those teams. I don't see a dominant team. I know Arkansas has a really good player in Moses Moody, but I don't see either team as being unbeatable. So I think there's a path there to maybe getting to an Elite Eight if they can get past either one can get past the first round. Obviously, I don't think Ohio State's going to have any problems getting past Oral Roberts, but I know the Hokies and the Gators could be a toss-up.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Land Grant Holy Land in Conversation. Also, thanks, of course, to both Andy and Brian for joining us. We will have links to their respective SB Nation sites, social media accounts in the show notes if you would like to follow along with their tournament coverage. Also, if you would like to join Land Grant Holy Land's bracket challenge to win one of our world famous Not Just a Football School t-shirts, I will have the link in the article version of this podcast on the site. Or if you just want to buy one of those shirts or our other Big Ten tournament themed t-shirt, I will have links in there as well. If you are finding this episode on said website, landgrantholyland.com, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We will be bringing you an instant recap post-game pod of every NCAA tournament game until Ohio State cuts down the nets and is crowned a national champs, so don't miss a single one of those. Also, don't forget to follow Land Grant Holy Land on Twitter at landgrant33. I will generally be mashing buttons during games, but if you want to find me on my personal account, you can find me at bwwmatt. Thanks again for listening. We will talk to you soon. And as always, go Bucks.